Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Leading Conversation with me, Tom Dawson-Scribb, and as always, former Blitzbok captain, Kyle Brown. This week, I'm very excited. Someone who gave me personally one of my first opportunities in professional sport is joining myself and Kyle on the podcast, John Dobson. John, or Dobbo as he's known, is the current Stormers and Western Province head coach. Having walked a path through the University of Cape Town, the junior ranks at Western Province, and now has the top job. John is not your normal rugby coach, with a few degrees. He's authored 2 books, he has a passion for history, and a love of having fun at work. He's certainly someone that makes working in rugby very interesting. We apologise for the week's extra break between episodes, but finding the time in John's busy schedule is not easy, and we really wanted to have him on. John is currently playing the role of coach, director of rugby, and more is pushed to the limits in a union that's fairly tumultuous at times. He's passionate about rugby in the Cape, but more passionate about bringing people together in the name of a cause. John often cites poetry, teaches history the night before games, and emphasises good times, but also has a strong sense of empathy and an ability to include people and a wicked sense of humour. Whilst he comes across as friendly and jovial, because he is, his resilience and ability to push through the times, the tough times that is admirable. In this episode, we discuss individualisation, his own journey, how his view on culture has shifted quite markedly, and what he's learned over many years of coaching about what makes players tick. It is brilliant, and whether you know John or not, you are sure to enjoy it. Please keep engaging with us on all our platforms, and we look forward to sharing more great episodes ahead. Enjoy. Welcome to another week, Kyle. We had a little sabbatical of a week in our series, but that's only because we wanted to get the right guest at the right time, and it's not always easy. So it's good to see you. How are you doing?
You start the podcast by blowing smoke already, eh? I'm well. Thanks very much, Tom. Lovely day out here in Stellenbosch, and I'm actually looking forward to the day that we can do this in person. That would be cool one day.
No, great. I agree. And it's great to have someone who we've both known for many years, and I certainly see a lot of in my daily life, and he sees a lot of me, for better or for worse. But John Dobson, current Stormers and Western Province coach, director of rugby and a bit of everything. Dobbo, as you're fondly known, thanks very much for joining us. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very good, and I'm pleased. I've listened to every episode, like I said, so I'm very honored, genuinely honored to be on. So thanks very much. I'm good. We're not playing a test match. Thanks. Not playing a test match this week, so we can breathe a bit. Or a must win, or a last 16, or a quarter final, whatever we got ourselves into.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice to be in that situation at some point soon.
Yeah.
I might be inclined to take that pressure right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, the preparation series is not up there with the World Cup or Super Rugby or the Heineken Champions Cup or whatever. So,
Tom, anyway, to be honest, I was actually at the field last Friday because there's a Russian Club Sevens team that's coached by Vojo Zankwa down, and SAS Rugby Sevens. Anyway, there were games on at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I sat there and I thought, shit, like, I can't believe this is actually real and this is happening again. It's the first time I've sat and watched live rugby in over a year, you know. And the one comment I made on social media was that I don't think the guys will take this for granted ever again.
Yeah.
It's so true. There are a lot of obstacles and hurdles at the moment to getting professional sport or any sport off the ground. But yeah, when it's all going, you do feel quite privileged and lucky. And in fact, I had dinner with a couple of friends last night, and you know, one was saying that they're battling a little bit, and they've been locked down, and they're working from home, and they're staring at Zoom all day. And I said, geez, in a way, we're quite lucky. You know, we, Dobbo and myself, see each other all the time. You know, we're around a team. We still get to huddle up. We still get to talk to each other. So I suppose, we're very lucky, actually. Cool. Well, Dobbo, I'm really, really excited to do this. You say that you're honored to be on, but I'm really excited as to where this is going to go and the conversations we're going to have. I'm going to start with the normal question that we do start with. So you, as an avid listener, you'll know. But what is your most favorite value to be around?
Yeah, I mean, if I thought about this, Tom, when you asked me on, because I heard Damien Hughes' answer, which probably would have been mine, with kindness or empathy. And then, you know, Footy used love, and he actually referred to the used word empathy as well, which probably would be my main one. And I thought, you know, okay, let me think of one that's probably the closest rival. That's okay, just to be original. And that would be energy. And I think it's something that you would resonate a lot with, Tom, like just some of the sessions you've done with us in the last couple of weeks. When you've got a team with energy, they're in the team meeting with energy, they're on the field with energy, they're engaging each other with energy, that's very fertile ground, you know. So that to me would be, you know, I would say kindness or empathy. I think that's where my big learning as a coach in lockdown was, understanding everybody's backstory. Because as a coach, we're sometimes lazy, and I never took the trouble. I think it took lockdown to get us into that space to have the time to sort of interact with each guy individually to find out who comes from where, you know, who, what his dad means to him, who's sending money, like we talked about, you know, back upstream, you know, who's got, whose ambition is to be, you know, something complete. Just the whole backstory, every player was different. And the only way you can understand that is having some sort of empathy, putting yourself in their shoes. So that's probably the most, but secondly, and close second, would be energy, because we've all been out there. That's why I obsess sometimes what time we're training on what field, you know. Can we get into a stadium rather than being in our normal training ground? Are we wasting our time at 3 o'clock in the afternoon? So energy would probably be the one that I would be thinking most of at the moment.
Yeah, Dom, maybe go into that a bit, just around that empathy. You said you connected with each player. How did that work?
Yeah, look, it blew me away in some respects. We had 45 players now, and they're probably of a similar, you know, Kyle's seven spread is maybe slightly different, but the sort of principles and the elements are the same. We had guys of our 45 players, 22 were submitting something that was called, that they call themselves black tax. And it wasn't only black people or coloured people, it included some white players who were actually sending money upstream to wives and to parents, to mothers, to fathers, grandparents. So that blew me away, you know, because I thought, hell, you're earning 1.x million or 2.x million, and you know, well, what's your worries in the world? And you know, understanding, you know, that you've got completely different, that's Scurrin Tabeni, who we all three know quite well. He's driven by not wanting to be a 9 minute Springbok. He got 9 minutes in that meaningless test before the World Cup when he came on for Scott Brits in the 90s. So that's driving him. He doesn't want to be. Bongi Mbonambi is driven by, say, for example, a fear. He's been through so much to become. Remember, he got subbed in a first half once to now be one of the biggest. He doesn't want to lose that. So understanding that. But I think the key to that is not sitting at the HPC or the training ground or at, I don't know when Carl's opening his first franchise shop of his coffee shop, but or sitting at Carl's coffee. It's literally, I either went to their house or they came to my house. And that changes the whole paradigm straight away. You know what I mean? They've got to offer me a glass of water, I've got to offer them, and the dog, get the dog out the way, or whatever the story is. And it's just a much more vulnerability. And I found that, and that's, you know, I'm learning as much as I'm a sort of guy who likes the emotion and that sort of stuff, the physical environment to me is increasingly important. And that's where I think I've got the most traction. But it's actually driving out to Carmel to go into Edwell's flat or whatever the story is, you know.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks.
It's amazing. Tom, I don't know too many coaches that would maybe be inclined to take that step. Or was that kind of pushed through lockdown because of the disconnect that we all felt, and you felt it necessary to do that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think you know, lockdown certainly gave the time. It was that sort of period where we were just allowed to start driving again, you know, June or June, whatever it was. But, you know, you'd remember Doc Moss, Carl, you know, who's the old Springbok coach from the 80s, played for the Springbok against the 1949 All Blacks. He coached at UCT like you, Tom, and he had, I don't take it down to in-house, but he used to have three players to his house for a steak after training on Tuesday and Thursday. So these were students who didn't get fed well in the res, and he used to invite them down to his wife, used to moan, but he would have Peter Whip down for a steak. And I thought, jeepers, there's no, you're going to struggle to get that sort of high quality interaction with you know, with a player, like get to know him as well as that sort of environment, because as you guys know, I like a beer, but that it can't work. That environment changes. It's got a fun element and it has some residue, but you're not going to get the content that you want, I don't think.
I think we were chatting, I think it was with Will Genia or it was Footy, well, maybe Footy, about not per se a line between coaching and players, but are you, I get the sense that you're happy to grow these relationships as deep as possible to get the most out of, because a lot of coaches would like to keep that divide, you know, and they want to see that, you know, you're in this position and I'm in that position. But I don't get that feeling from you at all. I feel like you're happy for me to expect the most from you and you to expect the most from me. And I feel like that opens that up with the relationship that is grown.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I know where I was when I listened to it. I remember Footy saying it about, he used that word baboon whipped with the players. I hadn't heard that before. You know, like, I almost...
I don't think he had either.
I think, you know, like, you can't lose your, like, it's probably right, your dignity, but I've got no issue with trying to become as close to a player as I can possibly be, to just for the point of view of trying to understand what's driving him. I've got to back myself as having the emotional intelligence or some preservation of dignity. As long as I feel like it's still, let's take a guy like I'm close to, and we had an awkward conversation on Monday night. So Chris Funsell, who's the Western Province captain, you know, I would regard him as a friend, you know, if I was to have my 21st again or remarried or something like that, Chris would definitely be there. And I've got to back myself to have a few beers, chat with him, have a coffee with him, but then he'll know that if I say, listen, Chris, this is out of order. And then you've got to know yourself, you've got to be intelligent enough to know. And I think I've still got that with every player in the Stormers squad, that I could say, they could see, look, I'm acutely aware of losing shape completely. You know, they can't see you, as Footy would say, baboo. Nick Mallett had a really good rule, you know, I think it was midnight, nothing good happens after midnight. And I'd like to try and slip out a bit earlier than that. But I think getting to know them as best you can only help you coach them. I mean, the big trend to me, and I'm speaking too much now, but you would appreciate this, Carl and Tom, is towards individualization. You know, we coach, and we coach people, not players, and every person's got a different backstory. So the more the individualization, whether it's from your gym program to game time to how you sub to how you feed back, it's just got to be different to every player, unless they're two identical twins.
I get that feeling that with, especially on the, I suppose, the negative feedback or the criticism side of things, that these kind of, or growing the relationship or keeping the distance could have their pros and cons. I mean, I understand that being close on a relationship, you have the channel to be honest with somebody, but it's also sometimes feels more difficult to give them that hard feedback. Whereas if you were able to keep that distance, you feel less engaged. But there isn't that relationship. So, you know, then maybe the person's or the player is easily able to fob it off or explain it away or get upset with you, and you potentially could lose them quicker. But I feel like they have both. There's difficulties on both sides of that.
I totally agree with you. I mean, there's some guys I can't break through to, and I probably compromise too much by reaching out to them. I don't want to name a player in our squad now. But like with Chris Funsell, chat, I mean, I drove around the block before I went inside on Monday night, you know, because I'm not arriving to break up with a girlfriend, you know. But so there is that downside. And then there is, because you know him so well, and let's take a random guy, you know what this means to a player, because you know him so well, then you are definitely clouded or not compromised because you haven't done anything wrong, but you're definitely clouded. And, you know, Tom's been party to some of those debates in the last couple of months, eh, Tom?
Yeah, that individualization thing is massive. I think, you know, we've had a bit of a journey with that Enneagram and personality profiling, and Dobbo and I will often talk about, Kyle, people will ask you, how are the guys doing? Now, what does that mean?
How is South Africa doing?
Who are the guys? Because, yes, of course, you understand what you're saying by that, because there's a collective energy and there's a sense you get on connection. But I think that should be the exception question. And the default question should be going through the individuals and saying, okay, well, this individual is driven by... I mean, I had a conversation last night with 10 of our young stars at the Stormers. And, you know, a lot of them spoke about understanding your why, which is quite a trendy thing to say, you know, understand my why. And Simon Sinek made it, you know, big and what have you. But, like, do we really know what that means? You know, and I think Dobbo went into that. Do we really know what, from a personality point of view, drives me? Do I know what happens for me when I, what does Tom Dawson-Scribe do when he gets bored or tired or under pressure? What does Kyle Brown do when he gets bored or tired under pressure? And that's quite different. So to think that you can tie everyone with the same brush or deal with everyone with the same technique is it's fundamentally flawed. One of our issues is time. I think Dobber is that you don't have time to necessarily deal with each individual. But I think because you've taken the time initially and had those conversations, it allows you to then act quite quickly and swiftly in the moments that we go through, because you've got that backstory of where they come from. And in the absence of that, then I think you are guessing a lot.
Yeah, I think it's a foundation. I think it can wear, you know, that's, we're now talking a good few months ago, and you do slip back into your routine. So I think it almost needs to be redone soon again, you know, and that may not be in quite such a environment. But, you know, I think, there's somebody said the question you should ask each player, but you don't have time to ask 40 players, is how did you sleep? I know we've got wellness scores and we fill that in, and that's a quality of sleep issue. But how did you sleep? No, I slept bad. Or why? You know, because I was out, or my girlfriend and that fight, you know. Those are sort of like little touch points like that to build on those conversations. I'm probably slipping on that, you know, because it does, Tom, it takes a hell of a lot of work. But I agree with you, and Carly, there was something you mentioned about work on the sevens in some old episode. But, you know, we say so easily in rugby, the team weren't up for it today. Or we played, Tom, as you know, the Stormers played the Blues and we got beat at Newlands just before lockdown. And we said the team didn't work. And when we actually sat down and went through the game, it was three players. It wasn't the team. Stephen Kitsoff worked incredibly hard. But the team weren't ready, or the team weren't up for it. I got a Tom in warm-ups, Carl. I said, Tom, do you think we're ready? Or Tom, do the Oaks are this? And he looks at me, no, he can't answer that. You know what I mean?
I don't think anybody can, though.
23 individuals out there. We don't know what's going on. Yeah, exactly.
Look, yeah, I agree. I think there is a part of, in any environment, whether it's sports or not, if someone is acting unusually, then I think you raise the alarm. So if someone is usually loud and cheerful around the office and chatty and they're quiet, then there's probably something up. If someone in a warm-up is usually high-fiving, I mean, we had this with one of our players, Dobber, and he got cross with me.
Tom, it's might be, I mean, maybe it might be worth telling the story. You can edit the name if you want to, but it's a prominent Springbok. But you got sent into the light.
He probably won't mind. So I went to see her in a warm-up, and I was like, is everything okay? Because I was watching him, and Dobber was watching him, and he didn't look, something looked wrong. Like, he didn't look like he was there. And so I just went up to him and I said, Tio, are you okay? And then he sort of, he didn't do much. He was like, no, I'm fine. And then afterwards he told me he was so pissed off. But I think it worked, because he said he was a bit angry, and he played all right. And I think maybe in some ways it works. So I think you've got to look for people doing things outside of the ordinary. Then it's worthwhile following up, you know, rather than trying to look at the whole or the guys.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly as you mentioned that I was thinking, but that's, you're looking at an individual case now. So that's not answering the question, how the boys, that's, you know, where, what's standing out as opposed to what is the whole group looking like?
Yes. And knowing that particular person is a catalyst for the team, he's the captain in his role. So he's a catalyst. If that sort of domino is not able to be pushed, if that catalyst is not able to be fired up, then I think you're in trouble.
But I think the requirement is also to know what is their norm. So those conversations you're having, Dobbo, the foundations that you're laying is now figuring out what is the baseline attitude, energy for this player.
Yeah.
As opposed to just going in, well, what's wrong with you? No, I'm always like this. No, you're not. But you don't actually know if they are. You know, you think then that would probably lead to you projecting what you think energy is from that player onto him.
I mean, remember Paddy Upton spoke about it in his episode, didn't he? And he said, like, people think I've got the secret and I'm able to read minds. He's like, no, I don't. I just ask people, so what do you do when you're good? And then, what do you need to hear when you're good? And then if they're not doing that, or they're not hearing that, then he intervenes, you know? So maybe
you raised yesterday, Tom, you know, Stephen Kitsoff likes longer meetings. You know, he's the world's best lucid. He likes a long meeting, not like a long meeting, but he wants to get through everything in a meeting. There's another player who's, you know, close to the Springbok team who in 3 minutes in a meeting is off the cloud. He's with the fairies. So his learning method and how we teach him has to be different from Stephen's. And that's, I mean, it's lots of work for coaches. But I think that if we're going to go back to just blanket treat everybody the same like this. It's lazy and it's not effective. You know, even funny things like I think it was happening. It was definitely happening before lockdown, and it was happening earlier in the physical sense with obviously years ago with gym programs and that sort of thing. And then, you know, lockdown. But even, you know, even just on the Zooms, you know, your Zoom background shows our difference. You're not sitting in a meeting room where everybody's wearing the same training shirt and in the same room. Now, you know, Tom's got a nice, delicious Monster behind him. I've rearranged, you know, my books that some of my books are in the background. I haven't actually
seen some of the real nice titles there.
I'll show off, you know, I put the academic books behind and the Sydney Sheldon and the pawns all on the right, you know, you can't see. But that's the point. I think the individualization of it has been dramatically accelerated.
Yeah, without judgment. Okay.
So speaking of individualization, Dob, I wanted to segue a little bit into your own journey. You've obviously had a hell of an evolution from coaching at UCT as an under 20 coach into the senior coach into an enforced sabbatical back to UCT, then Western Province and our Stormers. Like maybe just talk a little bit through, if you to look back over the 15, 18, 20 years you've been coaching, if you define some salient points in your evolution as a coach, what have those been?
Yeah, I mean, I think every coach you speak to, do you include you, Tom? I mean, you look back at how you were coaching a few years ago, it's with embarrassment, you know. But it can't have all been that bad, you know, because, like, you know, as I said at the start of this offline before we started, Kyle and I worked together in 2007 when he was a star, number 8. And we went unbeaten by some crazy stats. Similar, yeah, look, I don't want to keep it too in-house. Tom, you had a similar experience. But I think the salient point, and you've heard me say this before, is that the technical stuff evolves and changes and grows, but everybody catches up and sticks with that throughout. You know, like I was saying about the world of sevens would be completely, I mean, that's a brutal sport, what Carl was going through. I mean, I think I once saw him in the gym, and he was getting nervous about it's a brutal sport. But I think the teams would be set up pretty similarly. There's an odd variation in style because you're faster or smaller or whatever the story is. But the whole salient point is, this, to my mind, the shape of the group and the constituent of those individuals that are constituent. So I think that hasn't changed. That's where you're going to find your biggest differentiator. And that's why, Tom, you know, you and I work so closely together. You know, and it's a team culture, but that team culture is dependent on how you manage the individuals. So I think even Carl, if we went back 14 years ago, the culture in the team was relatively good. You know, we weren't technically brilliantly coached. And to me, that is the most salient thing that I've learned in coaching. And guys do even catch up on that, if you know what I mean, technically. I mean, everybody's talking about team culture, but you've got to keep evolving that. That's an easier differentiator to me. It's enough of a lecture. Easier differentiator to me than, say, a mall technique, you know, or whatever.
Tom, off the back of that, now what we were just talking about, individualization, and isn't there maybe something to be said about individualizing a player's buy-in to team culture? Because I'm thinking about having this whole team culture structure, and this is how we want to run a team, and this is what we stand for, and everything. We expect players to buy in, but aren't there different like entry points for players?
Are you asking me or are you asking Dobber?
I don't know. Both of you. I think, like, because I'm thinking you've got this structure. This is the team culture that we want, and this is what we want to embody. But are there different buying points for players? Are there different parts of it? Do you individualize that, or is that something that has to be, I don't know, I suppose fairly rigid for a team?
I mean, my view is that there have to be some shared values and shared beliefs that people can bond around and connect around. And then, yes, different people are going to behave slightly differently in light of their personality and their own beliefs. But there've got to be some non-negotiables in a team environment that people actually, and to use the word value literally, they value them. Like, they attach value to those things. And I think that's massively important in a team and a culture. I mean, I suppose I'm interested, Dobber, how have your values shifted over time in terms of what you've put emphasis on from a younger coach to a more experienced coach?
Yeah, look, I think you asked about my journey. I think what also helps in rugby is getting fired. You know, as we say, we learn more from defeat, and that's obviously it's poor discipline by coaches. When Dougal McDonald may burn in hell fired me, I can't remember Dougs. But when he fired me, you know, that's a massive motivation. But I think I was very much old school in terms of, you know, the team must be happy. But what that happiness looks like now has changed to me quite a lot, you know. So the happiness used to be singing the song in the pub and the guys were mates and that sort of thing. Now it's about getting satisfaction about their own improvement. Still want them to be happy. So I'll use an analogy which obviously close to my heart. It's like the beer. That, to me, that vibe stuff is now just the froth on top of the beer rather than the beer itself. The beer is what's been put in on the field, how the guys are interacting, how they're caring for each other, how they're looking after each other, how they're driving each other's standards and their own standards. That, to me, is the... So that, to me, in the old days, I'm speaking very simplistically, the culture was the vibe. Yeah, we sang a song and we loved each other and we had a jawl and we went out till late and we're mates. To me, it's a bit more deeper. Yeah, that's probably been the essence of the journey for me, yeah.
Yeah, I find that interesting in my experiences with you and, you know, not working with you, is if you just try and sell a vibe to players, I feel like they'll push back to you. Like, you won't have credibility. Because when you ask people what they want, generally, sportsmen want to win.
100%.
And they want to win, and they want to feel like they're in a place where they belong. And if you create an environment that's too soft or too cushy or too focused just on the fun part, they don't feel that they can win, and then you lose credibility as a leader. That's been my experience. I'm not sure yeah. if you.
I'm by no means saying that we didn't concentrate or weren't hard enough, you know, 14 years ago. But the guys were very happy to buy into a vibe, like that was plenty for a player, you know, to not be hard enough on a player was sort of secondary really. But we created, so I suppose that speaks to what you were saying now, is about creating a place where they feel like they belong. And I think everybody felt like they belonged. I think that's something maybe that you really did well, 2007 or 6, whatever it was. We actually had a fairly diverse group. Well, not too much, but we had quite a broad group. I mean, remember, when we were under 20, we had such a good talent pool, you were starting to rotate players in under 20. Nobody gets to rotate players in under 20 and keep the players happy about that,
which was
very different. You know, you felt at that point, I was 20 years old being rotated, and lots of players being rotated, and they're happy and everybody's there on a Saturday morning. So you're not playing, but they're still there, you know, because this was, it was interesting. So Tom, I mean, I don't think we were, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dob, but I don't know if we were that technically sound, but shit, we had a lot of vibe,
But then, Kyle, you would have gone through the perfect journey, probably so on a more intense way than what I'm talking about coaching-wise, to go to a culture like the Sevens, which is worldwide respected culture. You know, I said to the Stormers, because we get some of your guys, you know, and they come there and they are... they're trendsetters for us. You know what I mean? In terms of work ethic. But still,
it's
good people, good vibe.
The journey is, it was quite similar, Dobby. Like when I arrived at the Sevens, there was hard work was like the undertone. Always. And I think I always sort of characterize it as mostly a bunch of players that have been tossed out. And that's why they had something to prove. They had a real point to prove. A lot of those players, if you looked at that first season that we won the series that I was lucky enough to be part of as a young guy, a lot of those players had sort of touched professional rugby, but then were told something other, that they weren't good enough here, they weren't ready there. So it was kind of like that band of misfits, the exclusions, and they had a lot to prove. Every single one of them, they all had their reasons and they had their way. So they were really good players, but they were ready to outwork absolutely anybody from there. And I think that's kind of where things started. And it's a little bit different now, is when you have access to, you know, the top class schoolboy players.
Yeah.
It's the approach to things becomes quite different.
Yeah.
But so to actually go back to your journey, because I think you've done well to deflect there, and I felt like you were going to do that. But so I actually remember you telling me in the change room once when we were having drinks after a game, you chirped me like, you're too bloody professional for this shit, man. I was quite interested. It would be interesting to know if you'd say that to a guy these days if he wasn't keen to drink, have a couple of dopes off.
You know what? It's a theory that I've got is that because we've gone so... That the old amateur era still has some qualities, maybe because I'm just old or because I grew up in that era, that we've washed away because they weren't. So if we don't like each other enough to have a beer or a Fanta after a game, or, you know, or every team reunion I've been to, you know, is either that my team that won InterVarsity in 2004 or Gus Enderstein's team of 1997 at UCT, for example. I haven't been to one professional team reunion. Do you know what I mean? You know, Tom, we haven't had a reunion of winning the Under 21 Cup in 2010. You know what I mean? Last year, we didn't have a 10-year reunion for that. And I think some of those values about how tight the guys were, how they would sort of, what's the right word? You know, how they sort of unified themselves. They came from different, you know, they came from different work, and they came up to practice after work, and they managed to switch on. There are lots of values, you know, that they had in the old amateur era that we perhaps, you know, we could sort of try and dust off. And I sort of try and do that as best I can, you know. And whether that's stupid stuff, Carl, going to the opposition change room, whether it's, you know, just going to find the ref in his change room to say it's silly stuff, but
It's funny, when Tom and I were actually sort of prepping for this last night, we were trying to talk about what kind of coach you are. And I said, well, you know, you're quite an alternative coach. And Tom said, no, you're actually kind of old school. And I thought, well, actually, yes. Like, there's so much of the history of the game that you enjoy and exactly what you've said now, you kind of want to cherry pick what we can take from the old school way of
doing
things.
Totally that.
And move it into this, and just so that some of those things keep ushered along through the generations, so we can remember why, or all the goodness of it all. And what are some of the strategies that you've been able to implement so that guys can hold on to the history of that?
Yeah, I mean, like an interesting point would be like Newlands. You know, we played our last game there, and we faded off into the night playing appallingly against the Sharks, well, in a poor game. You know, but I think, you know, our guys aren't as sad about leaving Newlands as, say, somebody from earlier, maybe a Rob Lowe or a Brayton Paulser or somebody from earlier. So I think it's part of my job is to educate guys on the sort of old values of rugby, and that's sometimes telling them the story about the 37 Springboks or the 1981 Springboks, or story of who's the guy, Jack van der Skaaf, who misses the kick to win the series against the Lions in 1955, and he actually was a player of colour, which nobody knew. He hit it, you know. I quite like telling the guys sort of stories to, like, yeah. I sort of feel like there's a custodianship as a coach to inculcate some of those values. There's some coaches I don't like because I think that they're too. I'm not going to name the guy, but too modern, too mercenary, too selfish. It doesn't matter which jersey we are. We change 8 clubs, you know what I mean? And to have some sort of loyalty for the jersey or the institution, that's... Because I think you'll play better like that, if nothing else. And I mean, I've got no doubts there are lots of great professional coaches with that. I mean, you go look at some of the New Zealand coaches, they're very aware of the history and tradition of which they're coaching in. And I think you get better... If you're proud, and obviously Western Province, we don't always help ourselves with that, but I think if you're proud of your institution or your history or the legacy, you're going to play a bit better. You're going to enjoy it. You know what I mean? I always say when Western Province run on those thick blue and white stripes, to me, they're one of the most beautiful jerseys in the world. You know, and I try and get that across to the players because I think they'll play well. They enjoy it. They might extend their contracts. Yeah.
Dobbo, do you think that's replicable to... Like you know, you're not just a rugby coach. You know, you've worked in media, you've written books. Do you think that's replicable to if I work for ABSA? Like, I don't get to run out in a jersey. I don't get the thrill of that together. Like, how do you get that loyalty and buy-in and excitement around working for ABSA as I may do?
Yeah, look, I agree. I mean, it's very hard, and maybe, but I mean, I think you've had guests on this podcast. You've got to sell a cause. That to me is just a non-negotiable. If you're not selling a cause, and we're going week by week or day by day or year by year serving time, then you're just never going to achieve anything. So you've got to sell a cause, and then you've got to try and sell the ability to have some pride. And Carl, in our case at UCT, maybe in 2008, that pride was being the worst. if you know what I mean. We were the worst. So we're going to try and do something special. And Tom, you've had a similar, you've done similar stuff on paper, or in theory. So we were, you know what I mean? So we were going to go and topple giants, you know. If you're the best, you say, you know, if ABS is this banking giant, we're gonna you know, we've got to be proud of that, and we're going to maintain that. So you've got to sell backstory and a backstory and a cause and a mission. It can't just be operational, because then I don't think you you evoke any for a any form of pride or challenge.
Because you've been quite good at that. You know, you've won trophies in like the Vodacom Cup, which is also not a trendy old competition in South Africa. Under 21s, I think your super qualification cup, or all of these sort of random trophies. You've always been quite good at creating a cause. Maybe has that been something that you've given a lot of thought to around the language that you use, or has your cause more been around just getting people connected, as you would say, or tight?
Yeah, actually, that's a good question. I'd probably go, I would like to think, and I think the way you should go is to light up their eyes about what you're trying to do. I think I've always leaned towards the latter, Tom, you know, creating them, you know, creating them, getting the right people really tight, and then getting them to believe in the cause. I think I probably haven't done enough of lighting up the eyes. I mean, that's one thing, you know, I'm trying to talk to the Stormers now about as we go into the next cycle, up until the next World Cup, we go into Pro 16, is to try and light up their eyes about possibly playing in the Cape Town Stadium against Toulouse in a Heineken Cup game. I think that if you get that that excitement, then that becomes, work back from that, becomes a bit easier. But I've always gone the other way in terms of trying to get the team tight.
Can I just jump in there? So you mentioned trying to get the team tight, but I think we're overlooking the challenge, that challenge. That is probably one of the most difficult things that you'll ever be able to or have to achieve as a coach. So lighting up their eyes, and for me, what we're talking about now kind of is packaged as, you know, what's your why? You know, that
100%, 100%.
But the getting the team tight, I feel like we kind of skimmed over that. That is ridiculously difficult. You know, I know you've said it. You mentioned, I think, yeah, you've mentioned four or five times. How do we get that right?
Yeah, I mean, tight to me, look, that's changing, Tom, you know, along with everything else. Tight to me, as I say, used to be singing, "Here's to Carly, so blue in a pub." That was 20 years ago or whatever. But now that is, you know, where those guys can be honest with each other, have meaningful conversations with each other. Stupid stuff, Carl, like the guys at breakfast aren't the same guys sitting with each other at lunchtime. The tables are mixing. That there's genuine concern for each other. They know each other's backstory as well. That's a tight team. But where I'm struggling with at the moment, and it is easy for, and you may have the same thing as the sevens, easy for the top 10 or 12. You know, I can get them tight easily. You know, they're on the field, they're being selected. I'm really battling in our case with players, what, Tom, 28 to 43, 44. You know, they've got their own story. They want to be playing rugby. They want to be playing for the Stormers. And, you know, my platitudes about you're going to get your opportunity that you can see start to with. And that's probably something, that's probably an area where I think every coach has got major, major challenges. But the main thing with the group now is the quality of interaction between themselves and the fact that they're interacting completely amongst themselves. Like, Carl, I'll give you a silly example. Tom will know this. I don't like compulsory team socials. So, you know, they can't be at Briar Carl's house, everybody must be there, or Dobbo's house, everybody must be there. That must be entirely voluntary. And I mean, it's an old thing, but at the start of a season, maybe five or six guys there. When you've got, in 15s, you've got 17 or 18 of them, then, you know, pretty much a trophy's coming, you know what I mean? So that's what I mean by tight.
Interesting metric.
No, but I think it's cool. Like, you know, I was recounting the story of Paul Roos, the AFL coach, and his thing is, like, he wants to be invited to lots of weddings.
Yeah.
Because if he feels he gets invited, then he's connecting with his players. You know, you're saying how many people are at the social. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, I agree with that. I think it's not the only metric, but I think it is a key metric. Domo,
Tom, are there just on that point, are there ways off the field to garner that tightness? Are there ways that you can remove the, because now we're looking at a bunch of players that aren't getting the field time, let's call it field time, competition field time. Are there different ways that we could get creative with making those players take the lead, take the charge on certain things to generate involvement? you know, involvement, and then make them feel part of something again, because they're not getting that time on the field. And understand, you can only, every week you can only say your opportunity is coming, or you'll get minutes, or I only gave you 5 minutes this time because, and that stuff wears thin really quickly.
Very much so.
So, I mean, yeah, the question is, do you think there are ways outside of the field or off the field to generate that besides the braai?
Tom, it's your question, because I also want to know the answer.
Kyle, I think it's through, I mean, this is probably as much from you as from anyone, but I think it's about having interactions that are below the normal. So we can spend time and we can laugh together, and I think laughing together is a massive thing. And then I think also you grow tighter with people when you experience some difficulty together. So on a purely physical level, that's going through a very very tough fitness session, running up mountains and all of that stuff. I think that's tightening. And then I think it's having some deep conversations and letting people share their story and where do you come from and why do you believe this. We've done a few of it in environments that I've worked with Dobber, and I find that ability to be vulnerable and share a little bit more is very bonding and very connecting for people. And that connection then gives you that safety around the people that you're with, which I believe then correlates with you being able to perform better on a Saturday.
And excuse the pun, but without getting the players to take their eye off the ball, are there not chances that they could find responsibility opportunities, you know, off the field? So in terms of the team management, the players' version of team management, are there not opportunities for players that aren't playing very much to take responsibility of that? Because essentially then they become a leader. They become a leader in a certain part of the team. And for me, that would create a bit more engagement.
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw that in Chasing the Sun, didn't we? And the Springboks got players 24 to 31 to do analysis and this and this and this. And, you know, look, I think that was outstanding and brilliant. I think in any leadership, you must be very mindful of the context within which you work. You cannot copy paste. So because Eddie Jones did something doesn't mean Dobbo can do something, or because Rusty. So the context of a 7-week World Cup for your country is a very different context for a Western province or a Stormers environment that can be quite edgy at times over its year on year.
Yeah.
I think trying to use the same strategies don't work. I think the concept of empowering people is a great concept. The strategy, the actual surface strategy, might be a little bit different.
Yeah. So what is sustainable then?
In a rugby environment?
Year on year, what can you do?
Well, I think what is sustainable is to be authentically you. So for Dobbo, yes, humor is very, very important part of his way of being. So having fun elements in all the meetings, making sure that there's a little fun game before they start training. That's sustainable because it's authentic and it gives Dobbo energy as the leader. So that's sustainable. I think having a leadership group and a emerging leadership group is sustainable. And you can change the people in that. And in that, they're giving them different responsibilities all the time, offering them opportunity to reflect, offer them opportunity to influence in some, albeit very small way. I think that's sustainable. I think always going back to certain principles that work for you, which might be, we believe in a tight team, as Dobbo puts it, having socials. We believe in having deepening through conversation. So give the time to a Tom Dawson Scribble, whoever it might be, who can run those kind of conversations. So I think there's a lot of things that are sustainable, and they don't have to be weird and wonderful or copy-paste from another environment. They need to be authentic, and you need to believe that they work, and you need to follow through with them.
Yeah, I believe in that consistency also. Can't just hoy something once in a while and hope for it to land all the time.
Well, I think when they're not authentic, it's very difficult to follow through. So for Dobbo to do certain things is very easy to follow through, and to do other things is not easy to follow through because they're potentially not authentic. And that's where, and Dobbo, maybe you agree, or
totally
you
agree,
don't, but that's where the assistance of your assistants come in. Is that actually for Dobbo to chase up on S&C scores, what the players are doing at gym is not giving Dobbo energy. Am I right?
Yeah,
so I know. You have to get someone else to do it because you know it's important.
It's like Tom editing a podcast. It just doesn't give him energy.
But yeah. I've got to work out, and this is a challenge, Tom. I've got to work out what I can fix, you know what I mean, that I can do, and then I'm never going to do. So me looking at the S&C printouts from last night, jeepers, you know what I mean? I'd rather bring out Dostoevsky from behind here. But the... there must be some elements that I've got to become better at, and whether that's, for example, timekeeping. You know, that's something I can probably fix with a bit of discipline and determination, you know what I mean? But I think the authenticity of who you are as a coach, you know, and if that doesn't fit, it doesn't make, I think it actually also, I don't know where I heard that as well. It doesn't make, somebody was talking about Ian McKenzie, I can't remember who it was, but it doesn't make a person a bad coach. It just might not be a fit. It just might not work for various reasons. But I think you can't make it work by being inauthentic as a coach. That's just, there's just no ways. You know what I mean? I haven't had a million offers from overseas, but one of which was from a club I just knew I would last 10 minutes in. And they'd probably fire me on 9 minutes anyway. So.
Dobber, I mean, are we sort of slowly starting to get in the back end of this? But one thing that is quite unique in your environment, and you spoke about loyalty and knowing the history of a place, is that you also have worked in some turbulent times in the organization. anyone listening to you will know, you know, the Western Province Rugby is often in the press and you're dealing with this and that. And it brought to light this concept, which we don't give a lot of airtime in our podcast, which is leading up or managing up. We often talk about managing your staff or managing your players or whatever it might be, but how have you experienced leading upwards? And maybe you can define how you understand leading up.
At the moment, unfortunately, in Western Province, it's probably, it mustn't always be like that, but it's probably the dominant part of my job at the moment. And I think even in a smooth environment, let's say a club that hasn't, a lot of our problems here are because of the passion involved. You know, we're a big club, you know, in terms of supporter numbers, it's just the statistics, viewership, we dominate everything. So a lot of passion around rugby in the Western Province, so that is often where that stress sort of comes in. But you know, there's a lot of, and as a result, a lot of politics and dynamics. But I've realized that I can't create the environment I want down to the team with if I'm not in a space where I can operate at my best. And if that means taking eyes off me or daggers off my back or targets, you know, crosshairs away, that creates for a much better environment for the team. So I think it's as important. And it wouldn't be limited just to Western Province. I can imagine coaching, and I haven't spoken to Gary Gold about it, but I'm just using coaching the Eagles. There'll be some board members who would want X. And I've got to take that away from the team, that the team can operate by itself almost in a bubble. No team operate, unless the stuff from above is entirely supportive. You know, guys shaking your hand saying, well done. But so I've got to understand, you know, and I don't want to criticize Western Pro, I've got to understand the people above me, what they want, what makes them tick in their own sort of individualized way, how I can manage them, that they are supportive of the team, and how I can deflect away or defuse any potential sort of roadblocks. So let's say, for example, there's an issue at, and again, I don't want to personalize it, was at board level, they think we're not defending properly or something like that. I need to try and get in that room and explain to them, hang on, listen, we've conceded 94 points. The Crusaders have conceded 105. We said we're the first best defensive team. We changed it to a rush defense. Try and go and proactively do that rather than sit in my office and wait and let these guys carry on behind the scenes, you know. And I say, I'm very anxious not just to personalize this to Western Province, but as a coach, if you feel backed, as the head coach, if you feel backed or supported or the organization's behind, you're just going to coach much better. But that's just not going to happen organically unless you're winning every single game. So I've got to do that. I've got to reach out to that. And if it means extra coffees or phone calls or going off to a board meeting, it's in the interest of myself and the team. And it's again, like I said, it's understanding where those guys are coming from. You get various types of administrators. Some want to flex muscle. Some are really successful businessmen who see this almost as a toy. Some are what Russie sees as calls as jock sniffers. You know, guys who just want to get to know Stephen Kitzhoff. You know, some guys have got agendas to try and extract cash from their positions. You know what I mean? And it's. You've got to know how to manage all those moves. And then, of course, there are guys from all sorts of backgrounds and everything. And there are some quite incredible rugby administrators who go off to rugby meetings every night for nothing, like the old school, like, you know, the old club delegates, you know, club guy used to be on the committee at UCT or Villages or Tigerberg, who goes to meetings all night and misses his family just because he loves rugby. So I've got to understand that to manage that. And it's, I cannot tell you how important it is to the functioning of the team. Because as soon as the pressure starts coming on, let's agree with the media, but be nice to them as well, so they only have a go at you when they've got merits. But the more you can create a smooth sailing environment for the team to operate in, the better. And then if you do that, the more you as the head coach can operate downwards. But the days of saying, I think, stuff them or bugger the board or bugger the executive or whatever the story, I think that's being naive and you're going to pay a price for that later on.
Dobbo, I think it's 3 points on that. That is a hell of a lot of coffees. And as a coffee supplier, I'm very excited to hear that. Is that realistic to be able to placate or to make to try? Geez, that's a lot of relationships you got to manage, you know. And then three, when the hell do you get to coach?
Yeah, the third one in dark times is definitely a problem, and then your mind is that's probably a weakness of mine. And maybe I could be overcorrecting on the upward stuff, you know. That is definitely a challenge, is that because you're only really good as a coach when you're thinking only about your own team, because then you come up with silly ideas or this move or so that is a challenge. As against Carl, I don't want to go on about where I currently am.
In the conversation we've had now, you've spoken about the individual relationships with each player, which, I mean, this is transferable to any organization. So you're looking underneath, you've got 20, 30, 40 people underneath you. You need to try create an individual relationship with each one of them. And then at the same time, you've got however many levels at this organization you have above you, you've got to create those relationships too. I mean, it seems very onerous, you know? I mean, is this, and from what I know of a relationship, the little bit that I do, I'm still married, so luckily I know a little bit. But it's a two-way street, you know? I mean, at what point does the other party meet you halfway?
Yeah, it is onerous. I think, you know, that one upwards is perhaps a bit shallower. I just want to make sure that they know what's going on, and if they've got any issues, they can phone me. And, you know, it's not, I don't necessarily want an ongoing deep relationship with them. I just want them to sort of like me, understand what I'm doing, so they're not going to cause cuck. That's a pretty much a better way of putting it. But also what Tom alluded to earlier, the quality of the assistance is very good. So I think the team, I must have the relationship with the players when I'm looking at downwards now, and I must know what the team's doing, and the team must know that I'm still in charge. Just because that's our thing, how I'd function. But if you've got really tight coaching group with really good assistants who communicate well, you've got more of a chance of doing it. You know, I've got to the point recently where I've actually missed coaching sessions, and that's really poor. Do you know what I mean? That is me. Oh, that's my fault for going too far the one way, because it is onerous.
So then my question is, isn't the relationship upwards even more important to alleviate you of more of that burden, so that you can actually just focus on what you wanted to do?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I do it. It's funny enough, sort of done in a way that I go upwards, because if I don't go upwards, I know downwards is going to be worse. But then your key is, and somewhere I'm also not far from perfect, is having the relationship. I mean, in fact, we had a session yesterday about it with your team of support, that they know that I'm acting in their interest, that if I'm not there, it's for the right reasons, and that they are empowered. Because, I mean, I think there's definitely in rugby too much credit and too much criticism of the head coach. We've inherited something from soccer, which is crazy, that, you know, the coach must get fired, which is fine. You know, I feel like if we win a game, my phone goes crazy. Well done, Dobbo. No, hang on. You know, if Thomas Sweel had missed that last kick, you wouldn't be messaging. You know what I mean? It's just completely crazy. And I get all the credit. And I watch, and I go to the media conference, and I think, hell, Darby Snyman or Rita Shlangwani came up with that sheer drive. He's got nothing out of it. Do you know what I mean? And so I think the more that the coaching structure can be more sort of level, and where the coach is feeling empowered, allows me to go up, knowing that the organization's well run. You know, I think, look, assistant coaches kept in very small boxes. That's short sighted.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I suppose I think you're right. It's, you know, maybe come from soccer, and we also live in the world of instant gratification. So the easiest thing is buy the coach, you know, get a new coach in, see how he goes. And I mean, there's stats, isn't it? There's that wonderful book called Why England Lose, and it's written by an economist and a journalist, and he talks about stats in soccer. And it's actually a fascinating book, but one of the things is there's always a spike in results when a new manager comes.
100%.
One is because there's now you want to impress the new manager. Two is also statistically because you've lost a lot of games with the old manager. That's why he got fired. Statistically, at some point, you're going to start to win because of your overall mean. So there's a lot of luck that's involved. It's not actually that the new manager is that skillful. And then it plateaus out, and then she goes off the cliff. And I think, there's probably too much there. But I think that,
Tom, our game in Bloom, which we won in the last... my phone went crazy. Nobody knew I was in the toilet for the last 4 minutes, hiding in the paraplegic's toilet. So I couldn't believe we'd lost to it. It was essentially a quarter final for us, yeah. So I didn't put a message on for 4 minutes. Darby had to come fetch me out the toilet. So
I have. There's so many things I'd love to speak to you about, Monavi, but also don't want to break comments. But I have been privy to sending Dobbo a message saying we've won at Loftus. Dobbo was in the lift, and Damien Willemse, Damien Willemse had a kick to win it at Loftus, and I think Dobbo had put his microphone down and was in the lift, and I said, no, we've won.
that was in the ladies, not the paraplegics. I was in the ladies' toilets.
No, geez, Dobbo, well, I mean, fascinating. I wanted to ask you two last questions, if I can. The one is, these are your words, I've suffered from ADHD, and I find high-performance sport can often be very monotonous, actually. How do you keep yourself stimulated?
Yeah, Tom, I have to, like, when I, you and I chatted before a week, I've got to find X-factor things in the thing to, you know, if I see this the same day, if there's not something different that I can do, not just to keep me interested, that's what keeps me engaged in the program, you know what I mean? So that the players must, I hate the idea of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, same training week, same venue, everything, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's why I like to try and get to different venues. I think like I said at the start of this chat, the physical environment is so funny, is so important. That meeting can be thrown up in some way, how we could do it differently. I think that's something I know that resonates with you, but something that appeals to me, and I know it appeals to the players. You know, if they sit there, it's going to be a scrum and mall defense meeting of 40 minutes on the program every week. We're just not going to get the same transfer of knowledge. So that's why, that's how I get stimulated. Because, as you say, I get distracted. So I've got to keep it stimulating for myself. And that's why I said at the start, energy is so important. And energy you're not always going to get by the same things. It might be by competition. You know, guys competing, or as you go do break guys in groups for meetings, and I think you've just got to have the discipline, and I'm poorer at it, especially when you are managing upwards, of saying, okay, what's the purpose of this meeting? How can we make it really effective and fun or different, or this warm up game or that sort of thing? You know, it's something that I wouldn't give myself a high mark out of 10 as well. I think it's been higher in the past, and it's probably something I need to work on.
I mean, I think being hard on yourself, I think your ability to come up with creative ideas, or not only come up with them, give space to creative ideas is a real strength of yours. You know, I read a great article just this week saying, like, a lot of people are feeling a bit down and in need of, like, bringing, you know, getting more chis, for want of to use a South African word. And it's not always about rejuvenating. It's not always about giving a speech or something. It's often about reconnecting. Yeah. And actually just get people to connect with each other is a massively powerful way, and creative, or you can be creative about how you do it, but getting people to connect can be as uplifting as anything, you know.
We just went on a Stormers camp now, and we had two sort of goals. We had to change something around our attack, and we wanted to reconnect, you know. And I think a normal camp, we've all been on, there would have been 14 meetings. We would have made the guys do some, we actually talked about it, you know, do some, you know, put on a theatrical production in their groups, or done a rap video, and we would have climbed a mountain and gone through a dark physical space, you know, by climbing up over rocks or something like that, and built rafts and all that sort of stuff. And all we did was say, we did one on-field session of reconnection, and the rest was reconnecting. And some of that reconnecting, curious, it's not by no means just the pub. It's getting the guys downtime so they can actually go, Carl, you can pop into Tom's room and just have it, just talk rubbish, creating that sort of space. Or sitting on the bus, mixing the guys up on the bus, who's in the front, who's in the back. Or, geez, the one afternoon the guys could go and do whatever they want. And, you know, the boat, some guys hired a boat, and there were 7 or 8 guys who are not traditionally mates on the boat, and some guys walked down to the beach. So, and I think, honestly, it was one of our most successful camps, you know, and we didn't probably do a third of the stuff that we would normally do on a, you know, one of the traditional camps, eh, Tom?
Yeah, I think there's an interesting mix between going and trying to create new things and create engagement, and also create comfort in knowing what's coming. And so just one thing, yes, that pops to mind straight away is when we used to tour, we would always have your teammate that you'd room with. And then at one point we started mixing up the most senior guy with the most junior guy, so that, you know, the plan was that they learn, they understand the system. But it turned out to be a bit of a balls up, to be honest. Like, my room is my downtime. I want to spend time with my mate there. I don't want to have to continue educating, continue being in rugby. Like, it's the one time that I get to break away from things. So let me room with who I want to room with. And we ended up going back to sort of pick your own roommate kind of thing. But that was sort of an example of saying that it had really good intentions, but just didn't work out the way, because you need to have that breakaway. You need to have that time away from the intensity of rugby.
It's a brilliant point, Carl. It's a brilliant point. It's a great point. Yeah, I also thought of that, mixing guys of background. But you think, you want to get to a room, you want to put your bag down and chill. I think it's a great point. Yeah.
It's a good point. Dobbo, last question. You've got to put your dream team together.
He's going to read it off a list now, Tom.
Yeah, I'm organized.
he's
organized.
Your dream team together of you plus 3 people for any task that you want. Who are those people and why?
fuck, I thought I was going to get this one easy. I was going to go for those older, like, because I would say Russie, because I just think nobody thinks about rugby like he does, and I love his humour. Mallet, because he's so convinced, you know, because I'm not always, I sometimes lack conviction. Am I right doing the right thing? You know, he's utterly convinced that he's right. And it's refreshing, you know, to see that strength of character. And then a guy like Basil Bay is dead, but because of his romance of the sport. That would be my 3. If I was to say that these are the guys I want to go and design rugby stuff around and think around, those would be the 3. If I was to talk, and I'm not trying to give 2 answers, that is my answer. You know, in our current environment, and I'm not being funny, you, Darvey, and Norman would be, Stamen and Norman Lake would be incredible. You know, you, because of your honesty, Tom, and I know you don't realize this, but you can be very honest without saying anything. I know when I've disappointed you, or that, you know what I mean? I know it. and Darvey's not that, but fuck, he's a good operator. And Norman just brings enormous joy. But so that would be, like, in our current team, I think I'm very lucky to have 3 guys I'll probably work with anywhere in the world going through. So that's current. But in my dream team of rugby in the ether, that would be those 3 older guys, the 3 other guys. And then, I've got a couple of players, but that would, you know, like, that's probably enough.
No, thanks. So, look, you won't lack honesty with Erasmus, Mallet, and Bear.
No. They won't get on with each other. That's the pig.
No, they won't get on with each other. And I'm not sure they'll be. And I can tell you, they won't be asking as many questions as I do. That's for sure.
Mallet's, there's not one the question mark does not exist in Mallet's punctuation. It's either full stop or exclamation mark. There's no question mark in Mallet's vocabulary. Or there's no, what do you guys think? Are you guys happy with that?
No.
What could I do better? You're really perfect, Nick. No way.
No, it's this. Well, Dobbo, that was awesome, man. What a fun hour to spend. And thanks so much for your time. I know you've got to climb back into a lot of other things now. But thank you so, so much. We really appreciate it.
No, I mentioned to you before, like, you know, I feel like to the world you're a bit of an unknown entity. I've learned so much this last hour. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you. Thank you for opening up.
You've just been polite, Carl, but I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much. Okay, chico.
Thanks, Tolga.
Thanks, boys.
Ciao, ciao.
Like it.
Bye. Cool, Carl. Yo, it must have been nice for you. Obviously, having been coached by Dobbo a long time ago, not spending as much time. And then obviously for me, I see him often. But I really enjoyed the conversation. And Dobbo is always one of those guys who's very open and honest and shares, you know, his thinking quite freely. What does your take?
The evolution, you know, I think we, something that we spoke a lot to Gary Gold about, but chatting to Dobbo about his evolution as a coach, and I think very a Dobbo-esque way of putting it was the beer and the froth, you know, and how the beer and the froth have changed places and what's become more important and what was important back in the day is now supplementary to his approach to coaching. And you know, we're pretty lucky to all have known each other and worked in a similar space throughout the, I suppose, the last decade and a half, which is great. You know, it allowed us to dig a little deeper into things that are more personal to us and add that more personal flavor to the discussion.
Cool. The individualization thing is something that I find really interesting. And you know, I always find it like every coach and leader had their own quirk, and I loved his how many people are at the social metric. You know, it's one of those things that'll get massive criticism, but it's cool because it's just so authentic to Dobbo. And I really like that as something a little bit different from this podcast. So yeah, thanks.
You're right, Brim. I mean, that individualization thing is huge. It's, again, it's just going to be one. It's one of those things that is the most difficult thing to implement. So again, a lot of lazier sort of coaches will just revert back to blanket treatment of things. And you'll hit a level of success doing that, but you will never be able to connect and grow and perform at the level that you want to, or at the highest level, without managing each person, or at least connecting with each person on a some form of level.
No, cool, Carl. Well, thanks so much. What another great episode. Looking forward to, can we share who we've got next week?
No.
Okay. Well, we've got to get another great guest next week. Two guests actually lined up the next couple of weeks, which is going to be fantastic. Yeah. So thanks so much for listening. And we look forward to seeing you again next time.
Yeah. And thanks very much to everybody for the engagement so far. It's been great to get the feedback, and we're loving creating a broader conversation after these podcasts of our own. So keep giving us your views and a couple of comments on that, and we would love to add more questions, you know, add more viewers' questions and start prying on that level. So, you know, all the regular Instagram and LinkedIn channels that we've mentioned before. So thanks very much.
Cheers, Carl.
Cheers.